FM, Eye on Terrorism, exclusively on Chai FM.
David Harris, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Jolly good morning. I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Excellent, thank you very, very much. We're trying to be reasonable, intelligent, and not too politically correct on this station because, gosh, I feel like we've lost our minds at times.
You know, political correctness has a place.
Of course.
But it depends how you interpret that. I think the story that you just read is absolutely fascinating. And we deal in our world with political correctness on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. In the United States in particular, where there is this sort of very deep division now between left and right, people will not talk about radical Islam, political Islam, jihadism, call it whatever you want. People on the left won't talk about it because they feel that it is politically incorrect. And, you know, at Clarion Project, we're very, very careful not to besmirch or attack all Muslims. I'm far, far from it. We actually promote, Muslim rights and so on and so forth in a very strong way. But what we do point out is the attacks that are being carried out by Islamist terrorists and political Islam, this idea of spreading the caliphate around the West to democratic countries that maybe don't want to become Muslim states, and we find our work is very often not accepted in left circles just because it's not something that one can talk about in the 21st century.
Well, in fact, just this morning, where we were talking in the earlier part of the show about these horrific attacks in Nigeria that have been carrying on for some time, we've had hundreds of people killed in what is very, very clearly Islamist violence. And the Deutsche Welle this morning reports armed bandits have attacked a village in Nigeria, killing 40 people. Rural violence across Nigeria is becoming a key issue. This is not... You know, how far do we need to go to not talk about what the reality? This is not rural violence. These aren't bandits. These are terrorists who are going and killing people.
On the other hand, I'm 100% agree with you, but let me play devil's advocate for a minute, and maybe people will cringe when they hear this. But if you go back to the attack by a Jew in the 1980s, Baruch Goldstein, people were using the word Jewish with regard to him rather than Israeli. Right. And I'm sure that many Jewish people the world over, I'm too young to remember, many Jewish people the world over would have been absolutely abhorred by the fact that the word Jewish was being attached to this. But the attack was carried out kind of in the name of Judaism. And so if you're calling a spade in one place, you've got to call a spade in another place.
I happen to agree that Baruch Goldstein should have been labeled Jewish, because that was his motivation and that was what made him do it. And although it's appalling on every level, the fact is that it's also our duty to separate ourselves from that as a Jewish community. And I think there was absolute horror and soul searching when the Baruch Goldstein thing happened. So I don't. It doesn't mean that all Jews are that, and certainly, and I don't believe for one second that calling this Islamist terror in Nigeria is a slight on all Muslims. I actually think pretending that it isn't, in fact, is, because I think it works exactly the opposite way around. If you don't call it that, then perhaps you're not calling it that because you believe that all Muslims are that. So I actually think it works exactly the opposite way around. And, Islamist terrorism is a major, major concern, certainly in many parts of Africa. And calling it that, I believe, actually separates most other followers of the faith of Islam. I mean, that's my view on it.
So I'm now, forgive me, I'm going to turn interviewer and you're going to become the interviewee because I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Last week, we had the story out of France of 300 people, including Nicolas Sarkozy, the former president, saying that the parts of the Quran that call for the death of Jews and Christians should be removed from the Quran. What's your view on that? And we're running a poll on that at the moment, sort of as a sideline to another story that we're running about an increase in anti-Semitism in the world. But the question is, you know, if you're throwing aside political correctness, where do you stop?
No, so
you know,
I don't believe...
Is it fair for us to do that?
No, it's absolutely unfair for us to do that. I think one of the bastions of Islam, same as with Judaism, is that you can't alter the text. You can't alter a holy text. Let that, it must indeed remain there, but there needs to be education from within the Islamic schools and education facilities to show how things perhaps have changed and how that's not the way, and we don't take that, and people shouldn't be taking that literally. I don't think that we should, in the age of political correctness, be going around and censoring somebody else's religion or our own religion. There are many things in the Old Testament, and there are many things in the New Testament, in fact, that that could be deemed to be very, very difficult in terms of slavery, ownership, etc., etc. It doesn't mean that we have to block it out with a big black pen. Rather, what we do is we show how that isn't relevant to today anymore. I think that's a very, very different. I think that is a very, very different approach. I mean, that's my view on it. But again, it's.
I think you gave the perfect answer. If I were your professor, I'd give you 100%.
Well, thank you very much.
It's absolutely where we are at Clarion. You know, you can't interfere in somebody else's religion at that, to that extent. And Judaism, which is the religion that I'm most familiar with, has clearly adapted to the times. We still read the texts. We still, you know, on Passover, there are certain, a text when we open the door and say, pour out thy wrath upon the nations and all these types of things. We still read them because they are intrinsic parts of just what we do and who we are. But at the end of the day, we don't throw gays off buildings or whatever it is. And I think that is what really makes radical Islam, the Islamists, the jihadists stand out from the crowd. And I think you're absolutely right that it's about education. And that's why we work at Clarion very closely with call them Muslim reformers, call them Muslim moderates, whatever you want, who aren't saying don't be good Muslims. They aren't saying don't pray five times a day or don't read the Quran. They're saying if you want to live in Western society, there are certain basic norms that you have to accept. We have done that, and it's incumbent on other Muslims who are living in the West to do so.
Very, very interesting. David, moving on to the subject that we actually are focused, meant to be focused on today, which is, does community policing assist in reducing acts of terror? What are you seeing from your research?
So I think it's a lot more, rather than research, it's more anecdotal. That's what I was thinking about. I mm-hmm. recorded an audio podcast about this the other day. I was in traveling around the United States, been in numerous mid-sized cities, and it suddenly occurred to me, as somebody who grew up in England, where we were used to the bobby on the corner of the street holding his bicycle and saying good morning to the lady and offering to carry her shopping across the street and so on. You just don't see that in the United States. I don't see it in France. I don't see it in plenty of other places. Just the bobby on the beat, giving that sense of security. Now, why do I see that as being an issue with regard to radical Islam and the issue, the broader issue of terrorism? It's a deterrent. Plain and simple. Now, it's not obviously going to stop a chemical attack or the World Trade Center attack, but the people that we'd like to refer to these days as lone wolves may possibly think twice about attacking a particular target when there is a security presence, and particularly, one that is formal, that is police officers or whichever other arm of law enforcement from the government that is out there. And the obvious, experience, I said anecdotal, is what happened in Israel both during and after what we erroneously call the Second Intifada, that period of ridiculous, out of control violence in the first 5 years or so of the 21st century. And what happened there was because there was a massive, in that case, police presence on the street, which is akin to community policing, because there were people on street corners where you wouldn't, police officers on street corners where you wouldn't expect to see them. It was seeing the officers and turning around or panicking before they went into a shopping mall and pulling the ripcord on their explosive devices. And yes, unfortunately and tragically, police officers became their victims, but at least it was only one or two people rather than the dozens that we were seeing before you had that enormous presence. Once there were security guards on the buses, the bus bombings went away. It's just something that is missing in the West today. And as I say, I particularly feel it in the United States. And I think that if it were there, then some of these lone wolf attackers might be deterred from launching their strikes.
It's actually very interesting. I recall traveling in Europe soon after one of the attacks on one of the trains. I think it was on the way to Brussels. And I got onto the same, very, very same train or that schedule where the attack had occurred. And it must have been about 5 days later, maybe a week later. And there was still no visible security. And I was absolutely blown away by it. You'll excuse that expression.
I get the point. I think in there were certain places, I think in London, for example, immediately after attacks, you do find some sort of increased presence, but it tends to be very short term. Now, the Brits happen to be taking this particular issue more seriously. There is a much stronger police presence on the streets of the United Kingdom, particularly, obviously, around tourist sites, sites of strategic significance and so on. But in many countries, you're absolutely right. It's sort of a passing thing, if at all. And you know, I firmly believe that the police officers have to prevent speeding drivers and other types of crime, of small, petty crime. But in the broader scale of things, maybe one or two police officers, instead of holding radar at the side of a street, their time might be better spent protecting the citizens of their individual towns and villages.
What's also interesting is certainly something I noticed, and I've spoken about it before on the show. We were unfortunately at the scene of a terror attack in Jerusalem, and within seconds, the terrorist, or the two terrorists, in fact, were neutralized. Unfortunately, people died in the attack, but the terrorists were neutralized very, very quickly because people around them, and certainly at that area, just which was just past Mamil on the way into the old city, were in fact armed and trained. So it wasn't just a matter of visible policing, but it was actually also armed civilians who had been trained to stop terror attacks.
There is a difference between Israel and other countries, and I feel it should stay as a difference. I don't believe necessarily believe that arming members of the public is the best idea. Of course, Israel is different because people have served for 3 years. They have regular training. But in the United States, certainly once you get beyond shotguns, we're seeing what's happening. And I realize that there is a part of the Constitution, amendments to the Constitution, that talks of the right to bear arms and so on, the Second Amendment, but still I find it problematic, and I just fear that if members of the public are armed and wandering around the streets, that causes more problems than not. On the other hand, if you look at what happened after the Charlie Hebdo attack in France and the Hyper Kasher attack, we ended up with these standoffs in industrial estates, you know, 10, 15, 20 miles outside of Paris, because there wasn't that immediate armed response to the attack. You know, people were able to escape and hold up and eventually kill more people. More police officers died in shootouts and so on. And that's because of the lack of policing, whether it's overt or covert, in a city like Paris, which is a magnet for terrorism.
Absolutely. There, unfortunately, we do have to leave it. That's David Harris. He is the executive editor at the Clarion Project. David, thank you as always. We'll catch up with you next week, same time, same place.